We're holding on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, about 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins, Pinoitzam. We looked yesterday, the Gemara started discussing about the advantages of being married, that a person who is not married is without tort, without goodness, without bracha, without simcha, etc. Now the Gemara is going to kind of go to the other side of things, when a person has a wife who is not so good. The Gemara starts off, Rav have a miftah mit Rav Chiya. Rav one time was taking leave of Rav Chiya, who was his uncle. Amalei, and Rav Chiya tells him, Rachmana litzlach mimidi dekashim imoisa. Rav Chiya gives him a bracha, the Eivishter should save you from something which is even worse than death. So Rav wondered to himself, mimidi dekashim imoisa, how could there be anything worse than death? Nafak, he went out, Dak, he checked into it for Ashkach, and he found, indeed, there's a pasuk that describes such a thing. The pasuk says, I find more bitter than death. A woman, the pasuk continues, whose heart is a snare, etc. An isha ra, basically. So Rav Chiya is giving him a bracha that you should save you from such a thing. Which, you know, Rav Chiya himself, actually, the Gemara is going to mention later, the Gemara is going to mention soon in a few lines, that Rav Chiya himself had a problem. Had difficulties with his wife. Hello? So therefore, he's kind of giving Rav a bracha, beremez, but that's why only beremez, that's why he didn't actually say out in so many words, because, you know, if she overhears, he's going to be in bigger trouble. No, because if she overhears, right. then he's going to be in bigger trouble, yeah.
Or what kind of problem is she
with? You'll see soon. Well, you'll see soon. Actually, we'll learn later on that Rav, in the end, did end up having the same kind of problem as well. He also had issues. Yeah. And in fact, actually, here it is right here. First is going to be Rav, then it's going to be Rav Chiya. Rav have a kamatzara la debesu. Rav's wife used to cause him trouble. For example, ki amala vidili tloichi, if he would ask her to make me lentils. Abla chimsi, then instead she would make him chimsi, some kind of beans, or maybe chickpeas, or whatever. Chimsi abla tluchi, if he asked for chickpeas, she'd make him lentils. I mean, you imagine also the scenario. Who says we're just talking about what he wants for a regular dinner? We could be talking about, for example, he's making a shalom zacher, and he's making a shalom zacher, and he's supposed to have arbus, and instead she serves lentils, you know. Yeah. Well, okay, but still, it was a hassle.
That was the only thing wrong. That made a problem.
Yeah, okay, maybe. When Rav himself, we said before, Rav's uncle was Rav Chiya, but he also had a son named Chiya. Probably named for his uncle.
Chiya had a son named
Chiya. No. Rav, who was a nephew of Rav Chiya, had a son named Chiya. So when Rav's son Chiya got older, Apichlov, he used to switch things around. If he heard, Rav would tell his son Chiya, please go tell your mother that today I'd like lentils for dinner. And Chiya, knowing that his mother Dafka Salachas likes to flip things around, would tell her Tati wants chickpeas for dinner. So that way he winds up with what he wants. Yeah. After a while, Rav tells him, Yalla Imach, evidently your mother has improved. I'm now getting what I want. Amalei, Chiya tells him, I know who to call Pistola. It's not that she improved. I've been flipping things around. Amalei, so Rav tells him, this is like what people say, the one who comes out of you teaches you a logical thing. In other words, here I'm learning something from you, my son. I should have thought to do this kind of thing all along. But he said, Atle Tabidach, you should not do like that. Mela me, Mefarshim should say, if Rav is saying, if I do that, if from now on, now that you gave me the idea, if from now on when I want lentils, I ask for chickpeas, fine. I mean, I know, you know, I know what I really want. I mean, I'm changing Mepnei Shalom or whatever, so fine. But you shouldn't do it. Shenema limdu l'shalom daber sheker, as it says in the pasuk, they've taught their tongues to teach to speak falsehood, have ever going to twist things around. So you shouldn't develop that kind of thing where you're gonna deliberately go and lie. Another case, Rav Chiya have a kamatzar ledevesu. Rav Chiya's wife used to also trouble him, but he have a mashkach midi. If he found something nice for her, tsayla he would buy it. Sire lay the sudra, he'd wrap it up in his handkerchief, or my senior law, and he would bring it to her as a little gift. Amalei Rav, how come a sire lay lamar? So Rav says, how come? I mean, she causes you so much tzaris. Amalei, and he answers him, Dayenu, it's enough, Shemagadlis Banenu, it's enough, we should be grateful enough to our wives that they raise our children, and they save us from Chet, from Hira Avera. So that itself is a big Maila. One of the Mefarshim asks the question, so what is Rav asking him? What's Rav's problem if Rav Chiya is giving little trinkets to his wife? So what, is he trying to break up whatever Shalom Bayis that you have? The answer is, one answer is, Rav is asking, you know, you're doing good for her all the time. She's, on the face of it, she's repaying you with bad. And that's a very, very bad thing. And in fact, you know, in Tillim, there's a few places where David HaMelech curses out people who act like that, where you treat them nicely and they treat you badly in return. So Rav is saying to Rav Chiya, aren't you concerned about that then? You're giving her these nice little gifts, and what's she giving you in return? And so Rav Chiya answers him, you're wrong. It's not that she's giving me bad in return. She's giving me good in return. Okay, there's also the bad with it also, but at least
the good is
yeah, they raise our children and they save us from and they save me from here Rivera. So that's a big thing. So therefore, yes, she is giving me good in return for the good that I give her.
Nothing like that.
No, it's just saying, you know, Rav is thinking you're doing good for her and she's doing bad in return. No, the answer is we're both doing good for each other, which is as it should be.
But not as much as it.
Okay, it could have been better, but still. Another case. Makru le Rav Yehuda le Rav Yitzchak b'nei. Rav Yehuda taught the following pasuk to his son Rav Yitzchak. The pasuk that we quoted before. Moitzani ma'amim ovis ha'isha. That I find a certain kind of woman more bitter than death. Amalei, so Rav Yitzchak asks him, k'goin man, give me an example. And he answers him, k'goin imcha. For example, your mother. Rav Yehuda also evidently had a wife who was difficult to get along. Wait a second, I'll tell you, wait, let's learn a few more lines and I'll tell you something interesting that Ben Yoyada says on this. The question is, what do you mean that Rav Yehuda's wife was a difficult person? But we have another case where Rav Yehuda was teaching the same Rav Yehuda, teaching his same son Rav Yitzchak.
I'm sorry, you're saying Rav Yehuda,
the Amora, is teaching his son Rav Yitzchak. A person only has real satisfaction, real nachas ruach, from his first wife. Shenem, as the pasuk says, Yehi makor chabaruch, may your source be blessed. V'samach me'eshes nuracha, and you should be happy with the wife of your youth, the one who you marry when you're young. V'amalei k'goin man, and Rabbi Yitzchak asked him also, like who? Give me an example. And he answered, k'goin imach, like your mother. So what is it? Is it Rabbi Yehuda having nachas ruach with his wife, or is he having tzaris?
Maybe when she was young.
The answer is Miskat Kifa. She was a very tough woman. She was easy. She was easy to anger, but she was also easy to calm down. She would be Mavra Midei Seha. So when there was an argument going on, it would be a very hard thing. But then afterwards, it was easy to calm her down, and then everything would be good together. She would be willing to overlook Maveras Amidisera, Rashi says. So Ben Yehoyada has an interesting question. He says, if that's the case, then what's the Mami Mavas? Okay, she gets angry for a little while, but you calm her down real quick. So what's the problem? And he answers a very interesting idea. What the Gemara means to say, Ben Yehoyada says, is by nature, Rav Yehuda's wife was a very tough, hard as nails person, hard to get along with. But she worked on herself. She worked over the years on her midas to make herself more easy to pacify and to calm down and so forth. So therefore, Rav Yehuda is saying to Rav Yitzchak both, naturally the way that your mother is naturally the way she is from birth. Yes, she's my mother. But she's worked on herself to the point where now I can say I have covered up the rock with her. That we get along wonderfully. There's also the question before Shem discussed how when he says Moitzani Mami Mavas Seisha, how is he allowed to tell him, for example, your mother is not Lashon Hara? A lot of different answers. One of them being it's not Lashon Hara if it's a known thing, and here Rav Yitzchak already knew what kind of person his mother was. There's also the idea some of Farshim say that he wasn't telling. The Chofetz Chaim says it wasn't that he was telling it. It wasn't that he's telling it to him as a derogatory statement about her. He's trying to explain to him the facts basically. You want an example of Moitzani Mami Mavas Seisha? There's an example, not really meant as a matter of Lashon Hara, but rather as a matter of clarifying what you're learning. Anyway, all right.
Chofetz Chaim says that
it's... I think it was the Chofetz Chaim says that it wasn't Lashon Hara because it was meant as an illustration for purposes of learning rather than... And especially, there's the idea that it's not considered Lashon Hara if many people know it, and evidently, besides Rav Yitzchak himself, evidently other people knew also what she was like. You might ask, Hechi Dami Isha Ra, what is an example of a bad wife? I'm going to buy a makashtale taco and makashtale puma. For example, you have, she makes a real nice, she decorates and makes a real nice table for him, but then she also decorates her mouth with all kinds of stuff to yell at him. Which the idea is, as some of the Mefarshim say, is the idea, Mela, if she didn't make for him a nice meal, so fine, he'd go and eat in a restaurant or whatever, he'd, you know, like this, she makes a nice meal, so he feels, you know, he feels like, you know, like he's very much at home, and then all of a sudden, Rava Amar, Rava says a little differently, Makashtale Tako Mahadrale Gaba. It means, for example, she sets a nice table for him, but then she turns her back. Which Rashi says it means she doesn't want to eat with him. So then it makes him feel bad, like, you know, how can you eat from this nice meal when your wife doesn't want to eat with you? No, that was the first one. That was Abaya, Makashtale Puma. Rava says in Mahadrale Gaba.
No, but until the time of the Suda, and what, after that she's okay?
Don't know. But, okay.
It's already spoiled.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
By the time he starts eating.
Could be. Ben Yehuda puts it a little differently. He says, Makashtale Takav means, for example, that she makes the various kinds of foods that she makes a real nice meal with the kinds of foods that are likely to arouse his appetite not only for eating but also for relations. And then when it comes, she turns her back to him, and now he's sitting there, now he's laying there frustrated.
That's
would be a different thing if she deliberately withholds relations from him. Here, maybe, okay, she makes an excuse or whatever. Yeah, maybe it would be considered a meredith also. Yeah, okay. The Gemara mentions something about Shimshon, even more than that. The Gemara mentions about Shimshon, but Delilah, it says, after a while, after she's nudging him over and over to tell his secret, and finally she gets him, how does she finally get him to tell the secret? The Pasuk says she pestered him unto death. Or something like that. What does it mean? The Gemara says that they'd be having relations, and then as he's almost done, nishmita mitachta, she'd slip out from underneath him. So that's, you know, here we're not talking quite that bad, but still, you know, yeah. Amar Rav Chama bar Chanina, kiven shenasa adam isha, when a person marries a wife, avodos of mispakakin, then his averus are closed up. Mispakakin actually says loshen potkin on a coffin, like loshen of stuffing up, of sealing up a hole. Shenema matza isha matza toiv, as the pasuk says, a person who finds a man who finds a wife finds good, v'yafik rotin mashem, and he'll bring out goodwill from Hashem, but v'yafik is also meloshen poitik, like closing up a hole.
Stuffing it,
right. What's the word? So some Mefarshim say, the point is, the Gemara is saying, it's not that there is the concept, we had a Nashi last week, that when a person gets married, all of his averus are nimchal. Here, the Gemara is taking it in a little bit of a different sense. Not so much that the averus are nimchal, but they're stuffed up, as in they're closed up and hidden away. So if the person keeps on the right path thereafter, then fine, they're gone. If he doesn't keep on the right path, then the stuffing gets taken out of the hole, and there come all the averus again to trouble him, and therefore he's likely to have troubles. Right? Yeah. So b'ma'arava in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, kinosav inish itso, when a man would get married to his wife, amri lehachi, people would say to him, matza or moitze, famous expression. Is it matza or moitze? Right, matza, just because matza isha matza tov, the one who finds a wife finds good. Moitze, just because moitze ani ma'amim avas isha. So which is it? Is it a matza or is it a moitze? Now, what are they asking exactly again? You know, I mean, besides that you have the problem of Lashon Hara, I mean, if it's Moitze, is he really going to, you know, should he really be telling them? But there's also the question, I mean, it seems that they used to ask him this right when he got married. How does a person know right when he gets married whether his wife is a Motza or a Moitze? I mean, obviously, at the beginning, she's a Motza, otherwise they wouldn't have gotten married. So therefore, some Mefarshim explain that what they're telling him is, based on what we just said, this idea about that the Averis get plugged up, They're sort of giving him a warning in code. Make sure that you stay in the matzah mode in order that your averus will remain sealed up and not come to trouble you again, because otherwise, if you go back to your old habits that you had when you were a bacher, you're likely to end up with moitzah. You're likely to end up with moitzah ani ma'amim avas. That I find the wife, I find a woman more bitter than death.
What, she's a reflection of his actions?
Sort of, in that sense, yeah. Especially because the Gemara at the beginning of Sota discusses the question: does a person get a shidduch based on his meisim? A person gets the shidduch that he deserves, basically, or is it basheret from the beginning, from before they were born? So the Gemara actually makes a difference over there. It makes a distinction there between zivug rishon and zivug sheni, a first and second marriage. But from this Gemara, we see that even in a first marriage, there can be sort of that difference that if a person is not acting properly, then he can end up. Yeah.
So it seems to be a contradiction from Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda obviously was a Talmid Chacham and a Tzaddik, and his wife was bad. And here we're saying it depends on the man.
No, but it doesn't only depend on that. There's more than one factor. I mean, the same thing as Yisurim, right? The same Yisurim in general. I mean, usually ain't Yisurim b'lo chet, but then you have Yisurim shalava, right? So there can be, you know, there's various possibilities. There's a lot of other expressions, and one really interesting one that I heard many years ago, and I don't remember the source, is matzah is in past tense, motzeh is present tense. So they're telling him like this: there's two ways a person can look at their marriage. You can look at matzah, I found the one I'm supposed to be with. Yes, sometimes there's going to be rough spots, but I know this is my basheret, and I'm going to stick it out. Or motzeh, like I'm always having to second guess myself: did I really marry the right one? Could I have done better? You know, maybe we shouldn't have gotten, maybe we're not compatible with each other after all. The first kind is matzah tov. The second kind is ma'ariv mavus. It all depends on the attitude you bring into it, basically.
He made a commitment.
Yeah. Ben Yoyada actually to also explain something. I'll be the Arizal, something along the lines of that sometimes taka a person ends up with the basherta, and sometimes a person like sort of ends up, sometimes not really ends up with somebody else's basherta, but like they deserve to have somebody else, a woman who should have been somebody else's basherta for some reason. So that's also the difference here. Matzah or motzeh. Matzah is like you found her from the beginning, she was destined for you, as opposed to motzeh, where it's sort of like a b'dieved thing, like really she should have been the other half of somebody else's neshama, but for whatever reason the Eved should decide that she's going to wind up with you, and that can be a very difficult situation.
What's enough to mean, and what do we do?
It just means, you know, you're not going to know no matter what. You're not going to know whether your wife is your basherta or not, right? So whatever it is, you got to make it work.
You can still be a basherta, and you have to go through these
Yisurim. Yeah, that's also possible. I don't want to get too far off topic, but then in Sfurich Siddim, Rav Zevin tells a story from, I think, from the Tzemach Tzedek. There was a couple that were having some severe difficulties. They were always arguing, etc. And they come to the Tzemach Tzedek, ask if they should get divorced. And the Tzemach Tzedek, the wife's father comes, whatever. And the Tzemach Tzedek says, no, they're meant for each other. This is their respective bashertes. And they should stay married. This happens a couple more times, and after a while, the wife gets tired of it, and he says, "Look, you know, what is the Tzemach Tzedek, like a governor general or something? Like, you know, is he the one who runs things around here? That he has the right to tell me to stay with somebody I don't like?" So they get divorced. She remarries, and okay, she's happy in her second marriage, but they're not having any children. So after a while, they're feeling very bad about it, and she asks her husband to go to the Tzemach Tzedek for a bracha. He comes to the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek says to him, "So what am I, a governor general that I could order children to be born?" And when the husband gets back home, his wife explained to him what happened there. Amar Rava, Isha Ra Mitzvah Lagarsha. When a person has a bad wife, it's a mitzvah to divorce her. Dichtiv Goresh Leitz, expel the Leitz, the scoffer. The Yetzei Modain, and let the argument go away. The Yishvos Din V'Kolay, and then the judgment and the embarrassment will stop. Which the point why he's quoting this pasuk is that when we say Isha Rog, we're not just talking about that they're not getting along. We're talking about that she's an actual let. So like for example, you know, she's affecting things in the ruchnius of the house. We're not just talking about if you're not getting along, don't divorce her. Go to counseling if you have to.
A less is like somebody, the
literal meaning of less is like somebody who like when there's matters that need to be taken seriously, like matters of Torah and mitzvahs or whatever, like they treat them as a joke. The word less is related to that, yeah. So something like that, yeah. V'amar Rava, Isha Rav, Sabasa Maruba, Sarasa Betzida. What if you have, he says, Rava is saying, you have a bad wife, like the kind we just described, but she has a large ksuba. So you can't divorce her. You owe her a lot of money for her ksuba, and you don't have the money for it.
Take another wife.
What you should do is, yeah, Sarasa Basita, bring a Sara at her side. That'll moderate things, because then that way she has a bottle in the house. So that way you get at least some of the negative attention away from yourself. Nowadays you can't, obviously. Okay. Da'amri inshi, because it's like people say, b'chaberta v'loy b'silta. A woman would rather not so much it'll take away the attention for you. A woman would rather get musar from her chaverta, from her co-wife or another friend, than besilta, than from thorns. In other words, when you're trying to get her to do the right thing, she may not want to listen. But if her tzara is telling it to her, she's more likely to pay attention. Ve'amar Rava, kosha isha ra kiyem sagir. Rava also says a bad wife is as bad as a rainy day. Sagir actually says yom barad v'ruach, like a day of hail and wind, like really nasty weather. Shenema, the pasuk says delaf turded v'yom sagir, a constant drip, like when you have a drip in the house on a stormy day. Ve'eshes medyanim, and a quarrelsome wife. Nishtavar, the same thing. And the point is the point of the comparison is just like, for example, if your roof is leaking and it's also really bad weather out, then you're stuck. You can't stay inside because of the leak. You can't go outside because of the bad weather. So you're stuck the same way when a person has an ishara, he has the same kind of problem. Somebody once said a vort, a little bit of a cynical vort, that what the pasuk really means is delaf torah is only a problem b'yom sagrir. Only on a rainy day is there a problem with a leak. When it's a nice day, the leak doesn't bother you. Ishis medyanim, but a quarrelsome wife, nishtava, it's the same kind of trouble all the time. Regardless of the weather. Ve'amar Rava, boyure kama tova isha tova, v'kama ra isha ra. Rava says, come and look, how good is a good wife, and how bad is a bad wife. Kama tova isha tova, d'chdiv matza isha matza tova. We see the pasuk calls it that you found good when you have a good wife. And you have to consider, there's two possibilities. We can understand the pasuk. Iba gava mishtoikra, if the pasuk is talking literally about a wife, well then kama tova isha tova shakos v'shabcha. Then look how good a good wife is that the pasuk praises her so highly. Even gava, if in her herself. The thing is like this: this pasuk matzi isha matzi tov is a pasuk from Mishlei. Mishlei can kind of be understood on two levels. There's a lot of pesukim in Mishlei that talk about talk about your relationship with your wife. There's two levels on which we can understand many of those pesukim. One is it's partially talking about your marital relationship, husband and wife. The other is it's talking about your relationship with the Torah. That's the same kind of thing. We talk about Eishes Chayil as a song, on one level, a song in praise of the Jewish woman who helped prepare for Shabbos, who prepared the house for Shabbos. On another level, it's in praise of the Torah and in praise of the Shechina, etc. So what Rava is saying is, if you consider that the pasuk is literally talking about a woman, about a good wife, well then that's a great thing that the pasuk praises her. Eva Torah Mishtoikra, whereas if you think of the pasuk as being a metaphor for Torah, then you can say Kama Tova Isha Tova Shatora Nimshalava. Then how good is a good wife that the Torah is compared to it? And we talked before, the Gemara we once had an expression in the Gemara, mean nitla b'mi, katan nitla b'gadol. When you're comparing one thing to another, you compare the smaller thing to the greater thing. So if we're using a wife as a metaphor for the Torah, then it means that a wife in a way is greater than the Torah. How, on the other hand, kama ra isha ra, how bad is a bad wife? Just give, as the pasuk says, moitzani mamim mavas is isha, that's more bitter than death. And again, you have to consider iba gava mishtoikra, if the pasuk is talking about her herself, same thing. Then you have to kama ra isha ra shakosu magano. How bad is a bad wife if the pasuk takes the trouble to condemn her? Iba gehenim mishtoikra, and if on the other hand you could say that the pasuk is a metaphor for gehenim, then you could say kama ra isha ra shagehenim nimshalva. How bad is a bad wife that is used as a metaphor for gehenim? So now the Gemara is going to bring a few psukim, that's going to relate to this idea. One pasuk says in Yirmiyah, the Ebishter says to the Yidden, Hinni mevi ra, behold, I'm going to bring an evil, asher lo yuchu lotes mimeno, that they will not be able to get out of it. On the simple sense, it's talking about gullus. But the Gemara explains, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Abur, zu isha ra ksubasa meruba. This is like the case we just mentioned, where a person has a bad wife, and she has a large ksuba, so he can't divorce. So actually, Mepharshim discussed the issue, is a person allowed to divorce his wife and allow her ksuba for later? And the answer is basically, it depends. It's actually machloikas aposkim, but the answer is basically it's not really machloikas, it really depends. If she's willing to accept a get, then fine, you can owe her the ksuba for later. If she's not willing to, though, then you've got to make sure to be able to pay the ksuba when you're divorcing her. So in that case, then, when you have an ishara over here, she doesn't necessarily want to get divorced. So then you're stuck until you have enough money for the ksuba.
Can you borrow?
Yes, I mentioned yesterday that the Yerushalmi tells a story about Rabbi Yitzchak Lili that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah lent him money to divorce his wife. Yeah.
But can we take another wife in those days?
In those days, he could, but it was still an unusual thing to do. We said before Rava gave that as a piece of advice, but still it was an unusual thing to do. You had to have enough money to support both of them, for one thing. Yeah. Anyway, so...
Fathers kept the children when they divorced?
The Gemara mentions it elsewhere. I don't remember where the Gemara is about it. I think it's in Ksubas. If I remember correctly, the basic din is that up till 6 they stay with the mother, and after 6 with the father. But it depends on circumstances. It's not meant to be a blanket. It's not meant to be a blanket halacha. Yeah. Anyway, so this ra, this evil that they're not going to be able to get out of it is this isha ra ksubasa merubah. Some of them are farshim. I think Marsha points out that this and the next few lines in the Gemara, we're taking psukim that on the face of them refer to galus and referring them to cases of bad marriages is meant to illustrate the idea. Like you might not realize how bad galus is, but like this, the pasuk is helping you. Like this, the Gemara is helping you relate it to something that you can more easily relate to. Unfortunately, even everybody can relate to what it means to have a bad marriage, even if they themselves have a good one. Unfortunately, you know people who don't. So it's much easier, and that makes it much easier to relate to realize what a terrible thing galus is. And it's the other way around also. When you consider how bad galus is, it makes you realize what a terrible thing it is when you don't have ish v'isha zahu, when you have a marriage that's in difficulties. Another pasuk, Nesonani Hashem bidei le'uchakum, a pasuk in Eicha, that the Eibishter has placed me in the hands of somebody that I cannot get up because of. Same thing, Amar Chista, Amar Ma'ukva, Bachia, same thing, Zuri Shiro, Ksabasa Meroba, same idea, you can't get up because you can't get out of the situation. Rama Rava Amru, in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, they said a different explanation. This pasuk, Nesonani Hashem bidei le'uchakum, is talking about somebody whose livelihood depends on his money. Meaning, we learned on Omer Aleph, we learned yesterday that the best thing to do is to invest in business. Next best is to have land, or at least the Tosafot said that even the Hachilah you're supposed to have a plot of land to grow food. If you don't have anything, if all you have is money, then you're really in a pickle. At any time, prices can go up, or the stores will go out of business or whatever, and then you're not going to have any place to get food. Another pasuk, Banecho b'nesecha nesunim la'am acher, a pasuk in the Teichacha that says, your sons and your daughters will be given away to another people. What do you mean, another people? Amar Rav Chanan bar Rava, Amar Rav, zu eishes av. This refers to a stepmother. When his wife dies or he divorces her and he has to remarry and then his second wife is taking over, raising the children, helping him raise the children. Not always, there's the stereotype of the evil stepmother for a reason. And therefore, it's you're placed la'am acha. You're placed in the hands of another people.
Is the case where they're playing it in a positive sense, or that it's both negative?
It could be both. I mean, sometimes it can end up being positive. You know, we know of cases where somebody has a step parent who they get along with excellently, but unfortunately,
yeah,
sometimes not.
Those clauses sometimes they're explained in a
true. Yeah. Okay. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. It could be. Yeah. It could be that the Gemara is saying like maybe instead of it having to be to the extent where they're actually sent to, where they're actually taken away to a foreign nation, at least they're with you. You just have a stepmother. Yeah. So it's not as bad. Could be. Yeah. Another pasuk, the goy novel achisim. The pasuk says in Hazinu, the Eibishter threatens that I'm gonna anger them with a degenerate nation. And again, Amar Rav Chanan bar Rava, Amar Rav Zuri Shiro, Ksubasa Meruba. Same thing. When you have a bad wife, who she acts in a degenerate way, but she has a large ksuba, so you can't easily divorce her. Then the same thing. You're constantly angered by what she's doing. Some other explanations of that pasuk. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Eilu Atzdukim, or a minim actually is supposed to be that the goy novel, this degenerate nation, refers to the minim. They're the one who deny the Eibishter, who claim that there's two gods or whatever it is. Yeah. Thus we find in the pasuk the novel, the degenerate person says in his heart, there's no God. So we see that novel can refer to that kind of person. B'mafnisatana, in a braisa, we learn another possibility. Elu anshe barbaria v'anshe martinai. This refers to the people of Barbaria and Martinai, which are basically areas in North Africa. Shemahalchana rumin v'shuk, who go around naked in the street. Naked, or almost naked, whatever. There's nobody more disgusting and repulsive to the Eibishter than somebody who goes around in the street naked. So like they don't even act with a tzelem alekim. They don't even act like a basic with any basic humanity. Like
when
we're talking about goyim, but that's the point. But goyim nav lachisim. The Eibishter is saying that when the yidden don't act properly, they wind up being dominated even by such degenerate nations. In halacha, by the way, this line comes up in halacha. A person who regularly does that kind of thing, or for example, even like you see sometimes when people are doing heavy work or whatever in the street, like they'll take off their shirt. In halacha, actually, it's considered somebody who regularly does that kind of thing, who goes around in the street naked or mostly naked, is posolatus, because we say such a person is on such a low level, they're likely to just they're very likely to easily. To easily give false edus and not be embarrassed of it. A normal person would be embarrassed to give false edus, but a normal person is also embarrassed to walk around unclothed in the street. Rabbi Yochanan elu chavarim, a fourth possibility. Who is this goy novel? Rabbi Yochanan says it means the chavarim. We've talked before. We had in particular in Shabbos that the chavarim were the Persian galochim. You had the Persian Galachim who took over. They took over. They began to rule over the Persian Empire in those days. Included Babel about the time of the beginning of the Gemara, about the time of the beginning of the Amoraim, and they were very fanatical about their religion. We learned in Shabbos, for example, among other things, they worshipped fire, and because of that, on their holidays, nobody was allowed to have a fire in their house. They were only allowed to have fire in their temples. So because of that, for example, if it comes Shabbos comes on one of those days, you may have to put out your Shabbos candles because of the danger. So the Gemara continues on that theme. Omru le Rabbi Yochanan, also chavari le Babel. They told Rabbi Yochanan that the chavari have come to Babel. Shogun nafal, and he staggered and fell. From tsar, he realized. I mean, he lived in Eretz Yisrael. He's not going to be directly affected, but still, knowing what a Jewish community there is in Babel and the yeshivas or whatever are there, he says. Rashi says he's concerned. Shahol yibnei yeshiva masurim miyadam. Now the bnei hayeshiva are going to be given over to the hands of these chavarim. What's going to happen to them? Relay, but then they told him, mekabli shirta. You know what? These chavarim are not quite so fanatical about their religion. You can't bribe them. So then, Tritz Yosef. Then he settled down and was able to sit down again. So at least now we have a way out of things. Tritz means like he sat up straight. Yosef is Samach, Rashi says. He sat up and was happy. Now at least we have a way out of things. So Mo continues. Godru al Gimel mipnei Gimel. It's not the Gemara continues. Rashi says Omrulei. When they told him the Chavori came to Babel, after he settled down, they told him, you should know the Chavorim have made three gzeiros against the Jews of Babel. And he answered Mipnei Gimel. The reason why the Goyim made these three gzeiros is corresponding to three things that the Jews of Babel are not doing properly. What are they? Gozer al Abasser. Number one, they told him they made a gzeiros that people are not allowed to eat meat, that people are not allowed to shech. And he tells them Mipnei Matanis. The reason for that is because the people of Babel are not careful to give the matnes kohuna, the zroyel chayayim v'keva, to the kohenim. So therefore, because of that, the Eibishter brought on them this gzeira. So the Torah says in Parshas Shoftim that when you shecht an animal, you're supposed to give the zroyel chayayim v'keva to a kohen. The zroyel is the foreleg, the right foreleg. The chayayim are the cheeks along with the tongue, and the keva. So that's the thing. The Gemara in Chulin discusses, does this apply in Chutz Laaretz? Everybody agrees it applies in Eretz Yisrael.
Today.
But there's machloikas in the Gemara there whether it applies in Chutz Laaretz. Rabbi Yochanan evidently holds that it applies in Chutz Laaretz as well. However, the Gemara says there that in the end, the people of Babel, and in general, the Jews of Chutz Laaretz, started to be noyig, like the opinion of Rabbi Illa over there, who says that it's not noyig in Chutz Laaretz. So what they do about it in Eretz Yisrael, nowadays, I'm not sure, but in Chutz Laaretz, you generally don't see it done because we're so much on this opinion of Rabbi Loi. But Rabbi Yochanan evidently held that that's not the right thing to do. the Chassam Sofer says an interest says a different idea. He wasn't saying so much about the Matnas Kahuna. He's saying in a more general way that the Matnas Kahuna symbolized the idea that you have Tamei Chachamim, you're obligated, the rest of the Jewish people are obligated to support him. Yisachar Zvulun, the whole idea that the Lo Shevet Levi Bilvad, like the Rambam says, you know, anybody who gives themselves over to Torah, then the Eibush to provide the portion for them. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, because in Bavel they're not careful to support their Tamei Chachamim, therefore the Eibush brought this Gzeirah on them. And the Chassam Sofer continues, the same thing happened in his own times. In his own times also, he says, people were getting careless for supporting Tamei Chachamim, and the government in those times also made Gzeirahs against Shchita. Number two, they told him, Gozra al Mechatzoyt. They made a Gzeirah to close the bathhouses. And he answers them, Mipnei Tvila, because they're not being careful with the Dinim of Tvila. Which two possibilities? Some of us should say it means that obviously they're tovel. I mean, he's not kosher of them of having relations with nidus. But either they're not being careful with the details of tevila, like the dinim of chatzitza or whatever, or he means that they're not being careful with the dinim with tevilas ezra, the idea that a balkeri is supposed to tovel before he davens or learns Torah, which we learned way back in brachas, that they were careless about it in Babel. And Rabbi Yochanan felt that that's the reason why corresponding to that, the goyim made a gzeira against bathhouses. Number three, kamachatati shichvi. Number three, they told him, the goyim, these chavarim over there in Bado, are unearthing the dead. Which actually, this was part one of the main ideas of the chavari religion, of the Persian religion of those days, was they considered the ground to be holy. So therefore, they held it's wrong to bury dead people in the ground. They cremated them, or they exposed. They put them up on platforms for birds of prey to eat, or like they do in some third world countries nowadays. Whatever it was, exactly. But they're going around and digging up graves. And he says, the reason why that's happening is because there are Jews celebrating on the Goyish holidays. And what's the point? The Goyish holidays are in honor of their idols, which are dead. So therefore, in return, the dead are being unearthed. And where do we see that the dead being unearthed is a punishment like that? The pasuk says, "V'hoisa yad Hashem b'chem uvaveisechem." The Shmuel says that if you don't listen to the Eved, then the hand of Hashem will be against you and your forefathers. Now, against you, fine, you're alive. How are your forefathers? They're dead already. What's going to happen to them? That's Amar Rav Bashmuel. This means unearthing the dead. Because a Braita says, "Ba'avon chayim mesim mischatadin," as because of the averus of the living, the dead get the dead get unburied, get dug up. Amalei Rava l'Rava Bamori. More on this topic. Rava asks Rava Bamori. Now you have a pasuk that says in connection with the korban, loye osu v'loye kavru. They're not going to be gathered up, the bodies. They're not going to be buried. L'doymen apnei adama yiyu. There'll be waste on the surface of the ground. And then the pasuk continues, v'nivcha mavas mechayim. That the ones who are still alive, death will be preferable to them than life. So the question is, if they're not even getting buried, then why would they prefer to die than to live? At least they'll live. They'll eventually get a proper burial. Amalei says to him, what it means is nivcha mavas l'rishayim. It means that for the rishayim, the pasuk is saying for the rishayim it would be better off to die shalayichu ba'olam hazeh, that they should not continue to live in this world v'yechdu v'yiflu v'gehenim, and then they'll continue doing averus and they're going to wind up in gehenim. So for the rishayim, the pasuk is not nivcha mavas mechayim as in they will prefer death to life, but rather it's like the Eibishter editorializing through the navi that you know what these kinds of rishayim. Death would be better for them than life. Because the longer they live, the more averus they're doing.
Which kind of averus would they do?
Well, I mean, they're the big three, primarily, in the times of in the years before the Korban. Yeah. I mean, I don't remember where we had this, but there's the very famous expression that the Gemara says that the underlying problem was that they did not make a bracha before they learned Torah, which eventually led them down the wrong path. They started looking at the Torah as they started looking at the Torah as their own chachma, kind of, or just like a science or an interesting thing to know, rather than a chachmas or a son of Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, and that gradually led them down the wrong path.
Learning Torah, how did they come to those three levels? I mean,
that's the thing, because they were learning Torah without remembering the one who gave the Torah.
Well,
they were, and yeah. And this is the idea, besides why we make a bracha on the Torah before, this is the whole idea of what Chassidus came to accomplish is to make sure that you have to have Berchu b'Torah t'chila, that you have to have, you can't learn Torah and forget about the Nois in HaTorah.
Some people say that the problem with the Second Temple was the problem with Elias and the other things we used to
get. We're talking about the first Beis Hamikdash, first of all, not the second. But yeah, you're right. There's a Gemara, I think, in Sanhedrin that says that really they wanted Arias, and therefore they used Avodah Zarah as an excuse for that, because the various pagan gods of those days didn't have any kind of moral code. Yeah. Going back to the topic of wives, of good wives versus of good versus not good wives, Gemara quotes Kosev B'Sefer Ben Sira. It says in Sefer Ben Sira the following. Sefer Ben Sira, we've talked about briefly before, is a sefer written by somebody early in the time of the Second Beis Hamikdash. Actually, it says in various places that he was a grandson of Yirmiyahu. But he wrote a sefer kind of in the style of parts of Tanakh. Many parts of it, the style is very reminiscent of Sefer Mishlei. But it wasn't written by Ruach HaKodesh, so it didn't become part of Tanakh. Eventually most of the original of it was lost. The Greeks took it over and they translated it. The Greek-speaking Jews, they translated it to Greek. Eventually, it wound up as part of the Christian Bible. And eventually, in the last 100 years, in the Cairo Geniza and in the Dead Sea Scrolls and whatever, they found bits and pieces of the Hebrew of it. So the Gemara discusses a number of places. Actually, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that discusses the question: are you even allowed to read Sefer Ben Sira, or is it considered like Sifrei Aminim or something? But the Gemara mentions over there, okay, maybe not as a continuous thing, but at least there are good vertach in it, and those you're allowed to learn. So here the Gemara quotes some of them.
Why was we know it wasn't written with Ruach HaKodesh?
It wasn't. If it had been written with Ruach HaKodesh, it would have been included in Tanakh. First of all, it was by the time Ben Sira lived after the time of Nevuah was over. Nevuah ended early in the time of the Second Beis Hamikdash. Ben Sira lived after that. He was a contemporary of Shimon HaTzadik. He describes Shimon HaTzadik towards the end of the book. He has a whole poem over there describing Shimon HaTzadik in very beautiful lyrical terms. Some of the expressions that he uses actually are in the period Ka'il Animtach that we say Anim Kibur Ka'il Animtach Vadore Mala Mare Koyin. Some of the expressions in there are taken from his hymn about Shimon HaTzadik, how he looked when he came out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But yeah, Shimon HaTzadik is Mishyorei Knesset Gedolah. He's already a little later in the time of the first of the second Beis Hamikdash after the last of him. Yeah. Anyway, so because of the Sefer Ben Sira, Isha Tova Matana Tova Labaila, a good wife is a good gift for her husband. Uchtiv, and the passage continues, Tova B'Chek Yorei Elikim Tinasin. Such goodness is put into the lap of somebody who is a Yorei Elikim. Hagoyt Habach actually says that these two are actually part of one long expression. Isha Tova Matana Tova B'Chek Yorei Elikim Tinasin. Okay. He continues, Isha Ra Tzaras Labaila. A bad wife is like a tzaras for her husband. Maitakante, so how do you fix things up? You go Shannon, divorce her, v'yisrafim mitzarate, and that way you'll be healed from your tzaras. I think the Oroch HaNer says a vote on this. What it means is the kind of Isha Ra we're talking about is the kind where because of her now the husband now has a bad name, like because of the way she acted now he has a bad name around. So fine, it's not automatically you divorce her, that doesn't automatically take care of the situation, but at least now he can start Yisrafim Mitzarate, now he can start the process of clearing his name. He continues, Ben Sira, Isha Yafa Ashre Baila, a beautiful wife, her husband is happy, Misbayom of Tiflayim, his years are twice as long, meaning, he feels like he lived twice as long as he really did. Or some of Farshim say, the Vortas, if he has a beautiful wife, he only focuses on her, he's not going to come to go after anybody else, so therefore he'll have a double life, in Olam Hazeh and in Olam Haba. Halim ein chameishes chayin. He continues, keep away your eyes from a graceful woman who's not yours. Penti lochad b'mtsudasa, because you might get caught up in her trap. Al tat etzel baila. Don't lean towards her husband. In other words, don't get over friendly with her husband either. Limsechim yayin v'sheicho, to drink wine or beer with him. In other words, you have, for example, a woman who you're attracted to, but she's married to somebody else. You're likely to strike up a friendship with him, so you can spend more time in his house and be around her. Don't do that. He's warning you. Because of the looks of a beautiful woman, many people have been destroyed. Many are all the ones who are killed by such a person. Rabim hayu pitzei roichel. Many are the another line from Ben Sira. Many are the wounds of the peddler. What's the vote? Rashi says this peddler goes around from place to place selling spices and perfumes and whatnot it isn't a Lashon Rechilus, because a Rechilus is a person who goes and peddles Lashon Hara from one person to the next, right? But a Reuchel over here is somebody who sells women's perfumes and cosmetics. So he's always coming around to the houses when the women are home and the husbands are not necessarily home, they're out working. So such a person is very likely to end up getting involved in an affair with one of these women, and then the husband is going to find him and beat him up. So therefore, he has many wounds. He continues, Hamagilim ledvar erva, people who bring themselves close to matters of erva, kinitzut marigachelos, it's like a spark that causes a coal to light on fire. Kiklov malay oif, and then like a cage full of birds, kain batayim malayim mirma. So it's that the person's house is full of deceit, full of tricks. He continues another vote. He says, "Al teitzah tzaras machar." Don't worry about the trouble of tomorrow. Kilei seidem ayelad yom, because you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. Shema machar ba veinenu. For example, tomorrow might come and you're not here anymore. Nimsim itzara olam sheinu shalosh. And now you've been worried about a world that's not even yours. This is all from Ben Sira. This is all from Ben Sira. These are examples of things. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin over there, these are Mahanim Million Malas. So these are some of the nice vertlachs from Ben Sira that we can learn. And he continues, keep away the many, many people from your house. In other words, don't always have a crowd around your house. Don't bring everybody into your house. In other words, be selective in who you allow into your house, basically. You may have many people who look after your welfare, who are concerned for you, but when you have a secret, only reveal it to one out of 1,000 of them. Yeah. So these are all the quotations from Ben Sira. Now, we got into all of this, we got into this whole discussion about wives and husbands and relationships and whatnot. We started with the Mishnah, talked about the mitzvah of Piri Viribia. And we went through the halachas about it, so now going back to the topic of Piri Viribia. Amr Basi, in Ben David, we quoted this yesterday, in Ben David Bad, Shiuch Lekol Neshamas Shibaguf. Ben David, Mashiach, is not going to come until all the Neshamas in Guf have gotten used up. And we said yesterday that Rashi says in Nida that Guf, or actually Rashi says over here also, Guf is Paragud Shechoytet Ben Shechina Malachim. It's like the curtain that separates between the Shechina and the Malachim. Vesham Ruchus and Neshamas Nesunas, that's where the Ruach and the Neshama are placed. Shenivru Mesheshes Mevredeshes, that were created from the beginning, from the creation. Hasidus Leinasim Begufim, Hasidim Leibaris, which are destined to be placed into bodies that are going to be created. That's what Guf is. So when Guf is emptied out, then Ben David will come. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Ki ruach milafana yatoif," because the pasuk says, "A spirit before me delays the geula." Yatoif milashon delays or v'hati fatzayin. The neshamas ani asisi, and the neshamas that I made. So this is the importance of piri v'rivia, is because then you're causing guf to get emptied out faster.
Which is the next word?
Yeah. Well, in Perek Aleph, the Alter Rebbe quotes this line on Neshamas Ani Osisi to prove the idea that every person has two neshamas, that every yid has two neshamas, a nefesh elikis and nefesh habamis. You get this from this pasuk, yeah. Tanya Rabbi Yezah Omer, Kol Mi She'ein Osik Piri V'Rivya Keilu Shofech Dam. A person who's not involved in Piri V'Rivya, it's like he's spilling blood. Shenema, the pasuk says Shofech Dam Adam, but Adam Dam Yishafech. The pasuk says a person who spills the blood of man, his blood will be spilled through man, and those will be killed. And then the next pasuk says, but you'll be fruitful and multiply. So a person's not being fruitful and multiply, it's as if he committed a murder. Rabbi Yaakov says, or on the side it says here, Rabbi Yaakov Omer, on the side it says here, Rabbi Akiva, says, it's as if he's reducing the appearance of the Shekhinah in the world. Shenema, kibbutz tzelem elokim asas adam, as it says, because Hashem created the man, the tzelem elokim, and then that kibbutz tzelem elokim is the end of the same passage that we just quoted, shofech dam adam ba'adam dam yishafech. So we talked about yesterday or the day before whether goyim have a mitzvah piri v'rivia. The shiltus, one of the early goyim, Rabbi Chaya Goyim, holds that they do. Many other rishonim say that no, they may have the mitzvah l'shevas yitzara that we talked about, that the Eibishter created the world to be settled and not to be desolate, but they don't have the specific mitzvah piri v'rivia like Jews do.
many nations are going to come out from you, so it seems.
Okay.
There is.
Yeah.
They have a
mitzvah. Maybe. So there's a lot of, I mean, one difference is, we said before, Pruvu requires that you have a certain minimum number of children, a boy and a girl, and each one of them has children. Loshevet Yitzara just requires that you have children, Bechlal. Yeah. Also, we talked about the Nafkamina, if a goy is Nisgayer, that has he been Mekayim Pruvu based on the children that he had before or not? What if they're Megayer with him? What if they're not Megayer with him? The different possibilities. Ben Aza emekila shevach domo umayitad mus. Ben Aza says it's both. A person who does not do period ribya is shevach. It's like he's shevach domim, and it's like he's umayitad mus. He's reducing the shchina in the world. Shenema va'atim pruvu, because we have va'atim pruvu after both those things. Amru loyla ben Aza. You know, yesh no derfi no makayim. You have some people who darshan very nicely and they fulfill it very nicely. No makayim ve'en no derish. Or you have people who do nicely even though they don't darshan very nicely. You're doing the other way around. After no derish ve'en no makayim. You're giving a very nice drasha about the importance of pruvu. Nu, why aren't you makayim it?
Right.
So what can I do? My neshama yearns for Torah. It's possible the world can keep on going through other people. Now, how Taka can that? First of all, Tosfos points out that Ben Aza did get married to Rabbi Akiva's daughter, no less, but then he divorced her. He wasn't able to stay married.
He never had children.
So what's the Vart? So actually, the Alter Rebbe explains in Hilchos Talmud Torah that yes, it's alderach like the idea of oisik b'mitzvah potim in a mitzvah. Ben Aza is so much oisik in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, more than most people, that they're always potter from the mitzvah, period, verivia. For most people, the Alter Rebbe says it doesn't work that way. Most people, you should get married. You may not be able to learn Torah as much afterwards. Look, you know, I mean, and if you weren't married, would you be able to learn Torah until the death anyway? I'd recommend Arithmetic. The Torah is endless. So like this, a regular person, yes, should get married and continue to learn Torah afterwards. But Manasseh was a unique case.
The fact that he was so unique and so high Torah could have been a very bad example to have even, you know, to say, look, he's a super Talmid Chacham, and he doesn't...
But evidently not, because other people continued to get married and have children, so evidently he wasn't a bad example to everybody. Some of Horsham also say, the word when he's saying, Nafshi Chosh Kva Torah, he means, I push it, don't have it in me to get married and be able to have a marital life. I don't have it in me. I don't, you know, the same way as, for example, a person who's physically incapable of having children is potter from the mitzvah of Pruvu, an Akar, for example, as we'll talk about tomorrow. The same with Benazai felt that on a psychological level, basically, he's so much in love with Torah that he can't possibly be in love with anybody else.
What difference does it make in Torah? He can't divorce those thoughts from his mind. He could still have a relationship with a woman.
But evidently he felt he couldn't. Evidently he felt he couldn't.
That's not going to stop a person, the fact that he has those
thoughts. A regular person, Taka, not. But evidently, but now there was a special case. And the fact of the matter is it wasn't necessarily the best thing. You know, we learned in Chagiga that Ben Aza was one of the Avon Nichnus of the Paradis.
Right.
And what happened with him? He couldn't hack it. Which, you know, he didn't have, the Gemara is going to mention soon, we'll probably get to it tomorrow this week, but that Nadav and Aviu also, you know, they had the Rotzei V'lishoiv, they went and, you know, went to try to bring Torahs, and they're Vateitza Eish Melifne Hashem. One reason, they didn't have children, they weren't married, and they didn't have children. Ben Azai also, you know, in Chassidus, it talks about the idea that Ben Azai also, you know, he should have overcome all this and been married, and then he might have been able to survive the Paradis experience.
When Moshe Rabbeinu separated himself from his wife, the answer was given that it was because the Shekhinah was with him all the time, which was not the case here.
And the difference is Moshe Rabbeinu also had two boys by that time, as we said before, yeah. In Ochanam, yeah. Tanya Idach, we learn in a different place, a similar thing, but replacing Rabbi Yaakov with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Kol Mishein Osek Piri V'Rivi Kei L'Shefer Dam, a person who is not involved in Piri V'Rivi is like he's spilling blood. Shneim Shefer Dam Adam Samach Kavatim Pruv V'Gomer. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Omer Kilo M'Mayit Admus. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says what we said before in the name of Rabbi Yaakov, that it's like he's taking away the Shechina. Ben Aza Omer Chula, and the same thing. Ben Aza said that it's both. And Omer Loi Le Ben Aza Yesh Na'adurish V'Chula, the whole same discussion as before. Turn on the bottom. We learn in another braisa about the importance of Pruvu. The pasuk says, "Uvenucha yomer," when the Aron would come to rest, when they were traveling in the desert, then Moshe would say, "Shuvah Hashem rivavais alfei Yisrael." Hashem return to the rivavais, the tens of thousands, alfei, the thousands of Yisrael. So rivavais implies 2 times 10,000. Alfei implies 2 times 1,000. This teaches us that the Shechina, well, so the level of the Shechina anyway, only rests on at least 22,000 Jews. And this is why Moshe explains that this is why Shevet Levi Dafka was 22,000 people. The smallest of all the Shvatim had to be at least 22,000 people in order that the Shechina should rest on it.
We're saying that in the Mishnah and Tishabas is when 2 years.
There's different levels. There's different levels of the Shechina. There's a level of the Shechina that you have when there's one person. There's a higher level when you have two. A higher level when you have five, etc. There's a level of 10, the Altadeva mentions in Negeres HaKodesh, that there's a level of Shechina that when you have 10 Jews together, that even the higher Malachim would get burnt up from it, from the intensity of the Shechina there. And then you have 22,000, which is an even greater level.
So, we seem to be saying that in the absolute.
Okay, but we mean a certain level of the Shechina. So, Harei Shehoi Yisrael Shnei Alofim Shnei Rovavetz Chaser Echad. Imagine you have 21,999 Jews, and then you have one person who could have had a child and doesn't. He wasn't Oisik Peri Vedivya. Lo'nitz is a Gerdim L'Shechina, Shechalat Nishchistal Yisrael. So, doesn't it come out that such a person has prevented the Shechina from resting on the Jewish people? So we see the importance of Peri Vedivya also.
So that's an argument directly against...
Again, Ben Azeh was a unique situation. Okay, Ben Azeh was a unique situation. He didn't feel he had it in him, but whatever. We're talking about the average person.
Could have prevented the Shechina from coming among the Jews.
Maybe in his time there were probably more than 22,000 Jews. I don't know.
Well, I understand. So 22,000 short one who was not also
prepared in the movie? If there was 21,999 and there's one person who could have at that point
could have brought another child
into the world, then he didn't. Such a person would even be chayiv misa if he doesn't, if he's not oisik b'peri v'rivya. Shenema, as the pasuk says, vonim lehayu lahem by nadav and aviyu, they didn't have children. Ha hayu lahem banim, which implies had they had children, lemezdu, then they wouldn't have died. One of the contributing factors was the fact they didn't have children.
The
simple reason they were killed because of Eish Zara, but what? I think I once saw somebody said there were actually, well, if you look at all the Meforshim and all the different Sfarim and Chassidus and everything, you have like 57 different reasons given for why they died. But one of the ideas, you know, in Chassidus it talks about the idea they had Rotze B'lishov, they wanted to like run, their neshamas wanted to run towards the Eivishter rather than staying down here in the world. This Uvonim Lehoyulam was a part of that. They didn't want to be tied down to the Gashmiistic world with children. The Acherim say also he causes the Shechina to leave the Jewish people. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Lias L'chol V'kimel Zarach Acharecha. The Eivishter says to Abraham that I will be to you and to your children after you as a god. So, b'zman shezarach acharecha, when you have children after you, shechina shoreh, then the shechina will rest. Ein zarach acharecha, if you don't have children after you, al mi shoreh, then what's the shechina going to rest on? Al eitzim al avonim, on wood and on stones. You need people for the shechina to rest on. Yeah, you need yid. So therefore, yeah. And that'll bring us to the next Mishnah, which we'll continue tomorrow, about the dinim of if a person is married and doesn't have children, what the dinim are. We'll continue tomorrow.